This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. According to reports in the News and Observer, a state law requiring business owners to carry workers' compensation insurance is barely enforced. The report finds that thousands of businesses don't have any insurance, putting tens of thousands of workers at risk. The report sheds light on the failure of the state's Industrial Commission to crack down on scofflaw employers and the degree to which workers in the state are unprotected. NNO reporter Mandy Locke uncovered the story. She's my guest this hour. Welcome back, Mandy. Good to have you here.
Great to be here.
Workers' compensation insurance. Describe that for us.
Yeah, it's this really obscure law that most of us have absolutely no reason to know about. We might see these late night commercials on TV or during the day. If you're hurt on the job, call this law firm. But it's really critically important for people who get injured on the job. And the Industrial Commission is a really, it's a little known agency that is supposed to enforce and settle these claims of workers' compensation.
And workers' compensation is an insurance plan that employers, right, three employees or more, you pay into this insurance plan.
Our workers' comp law dates back to 1930, and it's built on this idea that industry ought to take care of its own messes. If your employee gets hurt on the job, it's your responsibility to take care of it. It's not Joe Citizen and the taxes we pay for the other social networks out there. And so employers who have three or more employees are supposed to purchase insurance that covers them when their employees get hurt on the job.
And, of course, the way this works, it sounds like, well, why am I taking responsibility for their, you know, carelessness? So if you've got an unsafe workplace and you're paying into this insurance plan, your insurer is going to walk up and say, fix that, move that ladder, put that wire up, because your insurance company is going to want. And therefore, we have a kind of market mechanism in place to make a safer workplace. That's how the plan works.
Absolutely. The safer your workplace is, the cheaper your insurance is going to be.
So that's the thing. You're supposed to pay in, and we've got a state agency that enforces this law. What did you find?
Conceivably enforces the law. The Industrial Commission has the power, in fact, the mandate to get employers who have to carry this insurance to certify that they have it. But they haven't done that. What they did instead is to contract with the North Carolina Rate Bureau, this sort of quasi-governmental private organization that works with private insurance companies, to provide information of what employers have what workers' comp coverage. But what that doesn't tell us is who doesn't have it. And they haven't kept track of which employers' policies have lapsed or been canceled, even though that information would be known to them if they asked for it.
So if I'm a worker and I get hurt on the job, how would I access this money that's coming to me?
You'd have to file, well, unless you can sort of appeal to your kindly employer and ask him to settle up with your medical bills and pay you for lost wages, you could file a claim with the Industrial Commission. But here's a clincher. Most lawyers aren't particularly inclined to represent hurt workers whose employers don't carry insurance because they only get paid if the claim is paid. And so often these injured workers have no one to help them navigate this system, which is fairly complicated. So there were hundreds of claims that had been filed, but a hearing had never been held. No one had pushed this to the stage in which a deputy commissioner would order the employer to pay. So that's what the Industrial Commission is attempting to address at this juncture.
And how many employers did you find are not carrying insurance?
The numbers are rough, but at least 30,000, could be even more. So you multiply that by employees, and we're talking about a lot of people who are unprotected every day, and a lot of these are in fields that are extremely dangerous. Think about roofing and landscaping, the kinds of fields where the injuries are more prevalent.
Now, is it easier to get away with this if you're a smaller company than a larger one? Do big companies don't dare operate without insurance?
For the most part, though, some of these companies were, 50, 60, 100 employees, and I wouldn't necessarily classify that as a small mom-and-pop shop. And I think that's the impression, that this is your ice cream store or your three-man landscaping crew, but that's not always the case. But sure, it would be easier to sort of go unnoticed the smaller you are, I imagine.
All right. So how did you discover this? What brought you or put you onto the story in the first place?
a little bit of luck and a lot of curiosity. I did a story a few months ago about private companies turning to the public records law to extract information from government agencies. And one of the lawyers that I interviewed told me about a client he had down in Florida who was trying to get information about what employers had, what workers' comp policies. One thing led to another, and I ended up on the phone with this guy who said, by the way, I think you've got a real problem in North Carolina. I can't account for a lot of employers that should have workers' comp. So we got the database and we did our own analysis, and here we are.
So what does the Industrial Commission say about allowing all of these companies to go uninsured when it's their job to crack down?
There are lots of explanations. There's this perception, by and large, that it would be very difficult, if not impossible, to account for employers who are off the radar. I found in many of these situations that these companies are on the radar of someone in state government. They license their trucks with the DMV. They've registered their business with the Secretary of State. They're paying unemployment. So these businesses would conceivably be known if someone were proactively enforcing compliance on the front end.
So your reports appear in the paper, and I understand now the Industrial Commission is looking into some of these cases that are backlogged.
Absolutely. Many state officials, the governor included, said this has to be dealt with, and this has to be dealt with right now. And the commission has done a number of things in a very short amount of time to address this. Last Thursday, they held the first of many hearings to bring back old cases that they had already ruled on and already told the employer that they had to pay up. Some of these cases were more than 6 years old, and nothing had been paid on them. So the commission called some of these employers in. They're going to be calling more in later this month and through the summer, and they're giving them the threat of jail time. If you don't attempt to settle this claim, we have the authority and we will put you in jail.
It's pretty incredible. So some cases have been adjudicated, you're ordered to pay, and you just ignore it. I guess so you must understand, businesses must know nothing ever comes of that threat from the state.
I think you're right. I think that they were waiting on someone to knock on the door and you know, read them the law. But they had gone years without any scrutiny.
So let's talk about some of the specifics. One business owner that came up in your stories named Jeffrey Jones had a reaction to the commission's demand that he pay workman's comp, or workers' comp, I guess we're calling it. Tell us about Jeffrey Jones.
Yeah, these hearings were very dramatic. It was almost almost soap opera-like at times, and Jeffrey was a really dramatic case. He was absolutely refusing to pay anything. He disagreed that the guy was owed anything. He said he didn't have any money to pay. Even if he had it, he just wouldn't. He said, if I have a lottery ticket and I win, I'm handing the lottery ticket to someone else. I'm not paying this guy. And in fact, he said, I welcome you to put me in jail because I need some health care and I don't have money to buy health insurance, so I'm happy to be on the state's dime in jail.
What about that, the argument that some of these small businesses really don't have the kind of money it would take to pay these insurance fees and still stay in business?
There are a lot of hard luck stories that came in that day, and in large part, these were sad cases. But having met some of these injured workers, there are a lot of sad cases over there, too. I've met injured workers who are on disability, Social Security. They're on food stamps. The local social services is paying their light bill. They are on Medicaid. And so you have to understand that the rest of society absorbs this somehow. These people have to be cared for. And if it's not the employer or insurance provider, then it's the public at large.
So that it's a cost of doing business. If you're in construction, there's lumber. You can't build the building without the lumber, without the nails, and without a safe workplace. That's what it costs to do business.
Absolutely.
That's the theory behind the law. What do you think is going to happen now? First of all, do you think anybody's actually going to serve time in jail for this?
I think Jeffrey Jones felt pretty strongly that he might enjoy a trip to jail as opposed to settling this claim. I think they will be tested. I think their authority will be called into question, And if they mean to set an example, and if they mean to collect on these claims, it may come to that.
It's a little like contempt of court, too, isn't it? Doesn't he stay in jail until he pays?
That's exactly what it is. They are putting people in jail for violating their order. They're holding them in contempt, very much the same way that we have in child support cases now in North Carolina. You're ordered to pay, and that's a civil order. And if you violate that civil order, it's a criminal matter, and you can go to jail until you pay up or at least develop some sort of plan to pay up.
What about reforming the system? It sounds like there's really no way to do this the way the system is structured now. Is reform on the horizon?
I would hope so, Frank. And other states have done this. I mean, this is not uncharted territory. Some states, Washington State, Louisiana is now dealing with this. They have developed really sort of advanced programs, computer programs that help tell them businesses that may be running afoul of workers' comp and unemployment insurance and cracking down on the front end before someone gets hurt and trying to collect these really expensive claims on the back end.
What's next for the story itself? More hearings?
More hearings. Many more hearings. There are some coming up next week, next month. They've got these on the docket for many months to come, and they have vowed to keep having these hearings until they have cleared their backlog and attempted to get some remedy for these folks.
Mandy, thank you for the great reporting. Thanks to the NNO for being there to bring all of these stories to light. Mandy Locke, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mandy Locke is a reporter for the News and Observer newspaper. You can visit newsandobserver.com to keep up with that story as it progresses. Just ahead, Accidental Birds of the Carolinas, a new collection of short stories by Marjorie Hudson, who joins us on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.